Live. Welcome, folks. Today is Wednesday, April the 17th, 2024. This is episode 3481 of the Survival Podcast, and today we're going to have a discussion on improving the Gen Z work ethic. Now, I already had somebody in the pre-show comments get upset and think we're making fun of Gen Z, but what I actually have is Sam Soddard, who is a longtime listener of the show and a very young, hardworking man, been a mechanic now for about 5 years up in the state of Wisconsin, asked to come on and talk about this subject. So I ain't making fun of nobody. But Sam has observed, you know, I'm sure some good, hardworking people like himself in that generation, but also a lot of the problems we talk about. And he doesn't want to just talk about the problem. He wants to give his perspective as somebody in the workplace who is working his ass off, how he can change it so there's more people like him. So if you think that's making fun of people, well, you're probably among the generations we're talking about today. Anyway, I did have somebody ask a question when I said, hey, did you even read the show description, or do you just want to whine about that? And they said, what show description? Just a quick reminder, no matter how you're consuming the show today, that I do live streams generally Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And we do have a little, like, subsite, tspclive.com, and if you go there, you should be able to see the next upcoming live stream at any time, unless I haven't updated it yet, and what's listed there is the last one, where you'll see the show description. And if you're watching the video right down there, there's actually notes available in videos. I don't know if you know, that's been around a while. You can read the description. I always have a summary of what the episode's going to be about down there, along with some really awesome links. So you might want to check out those kick-ass links down there as well. They're yummy. You want to go check them out. Anyway, again, that's what we're going to be talking about today. Before we do, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day so we can pay the bills, you know. Today's first sponsor today is USABerkeyFilters.com. That's Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason, like the real Berkey Guy, not the fake one. You know, was that song by Eminem with a real Slim Shady? Right? He's the real a Berkey guy, the original Berkey guy, one of the leading resellers of Berkey in the world, and that means if there's ever any customer service issues or something need to be taken care of, when he picks the phone up and calls Berkey, they listen to him. He also has some other really cool stuff for your prepping needs at usaberkeyfilters.com. But if you're going to get a Berkey or parts for your Berkey you already have, go to the real Berkey guy. Don't do, you know, go to some dude at the gun show that started selling Berkey stuff yesterday. There's just no reason for that. When we have someone like Jeff who's been supporting this show for so long, he's talking about supporting the show for a long time. How about since 2010? 2010 is when I met John Pugliano. He's an investment manager. I trust him so much that I trust him with my own investments. He also has a really awesome podcast called the Wealthsteading Podcast, and you can find it where? At wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow your garden. And think about John. Is John's one of us. He's a prepper, ham radio operator, former military officer, and he made himself into a liquid millionaire from investing, you know, on his own and managing his own investments before he went out and did it for somebody else. Like I said, he's the real deal, and his podcast, dead simple, couple times a week, short episodes about what's going on in the market and what you need to know. You should definitely check it out again, the Wealth Studying Podcast. The Wealth Studying Podcast at wealthstudying.com. With that, let's go ahead and bring our special guest on. Sam, welcome to the Survival Podcast, man.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. I was actually pretty excited when I saw your app come in and what you wanted to talk about and the angle at which you wanted to talk about it from, because it's easy. You know, we were pre-show chatting a bit. It's easy for an old guy like me to go, hey, in my day, men used to work. Like, it's all BS to the person that's, you know, living the life you're living right now, which, you know, what I'll say is I know people think it's different, but when I was young and getting started, work sucks. You start at the bottom, you work your ass off, you're unappreciated, and you feel like you're underpaid. So I get that, but you wanted to kind of come on and talk about your experience working with differences between the younger and older generation. So you, because you're in the workplace, you're surrounded by your contemporaries, but you're also surrounded by kind of more mature, longer-term people in the business. I think that's awesome. But before we dig into that, can you give us, like, your background? You know, I'm not sure how old you are, somewhere in early 20s, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what made you even go into the world of being a mechanic?
All right. So my name is Sam Stoddard. I'm 23 years old. I was born in 2000, so I probably turned 24 this year. But I was a part of a broken home, kind of. I didn't really have a whole lot going for me, per se, like everybody else really nowadays. But whenever I was graduating high school, I didn't have a whole lot of prospects. And, you know, I figured, hey, I'm going to need to get a job. And I didn't have a car. Kind of hard to get a job and drive to work if you don't have a car. So I actually worked at the school for a very short time during my first summer after I graduated. And I saved up just enough money to buy a really crappy beater. And it didn't run. So then I had to fix it. And then after I got it fixed, you know, I actually found a job just doing oil changes and tires and such up in Wisconsin. And, I've just started working on cars and I haven't really stopped. So here we are now. But yeah, so it's been about 5 going on 6 years now that I've been, working on cars. So pretty good so far.
And in that time, so that's, you know, it's half a decade. That's a while. You get pretty good at your job if you put effort into it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And in that time, you've been working, like I said, with people that are younger than you, people about your age, and people that are older than you. What is your experience in the difference between those demographics?
Yeah, of course. So the majority of who I've worked with, I haven't worked with a ton of younger folks, just because realistically in the automotive world, it's almost entirely older gents. Like my first job, I think there was one guy that was close to my age at the time, and I still believe he was a couple years older than me. Might even be in the next generation up, but, basically everybody I've worked with has always been about 40 years old or older. And it wasn't really until I moved over to a dealership that I saw some of the younger guys, because dealerships can tend to get them in at an earlier point. Mm. Realistically, with how many people work on cars, which is a ridiculous amount, everywhere you go there's going to be people working on cars, it's kind of surprising to not see as many younger folks getting in, which is a shame, really. It's important that we have younger people coming in, because it's not like working on cars is getting any easier, mm-hmm. Which is a real shame. Especially, you know, I've worked on almost everything that you can really think of. Just about anything that's on the road, I've really worked on it, as far as passenger cars and trucks go. But the biggest issue that I've noticed is that as things get more complicated, a lot of the older folks tend to want to go away from it, because mm-hmm. it's just not as enjoyable. You know, it's, the older you get, everything nowadays is super heavy, super big. It's like you go look at a truck nowadays and they're absolutely massive. And so a guy who's, you know, getting up on 55, going and trying to lift the tires and wheels on that just to work on it, it's a nightmare for them, especially with working on cars is already hard enough on your body as it is. Realistically, a lot of people are having, by the time they're 40, if they've been working in cars, they've had at least 2 surgeries.
Yeah.
With folks that I know,
people don't get it if they don't do it, right? So it's not that it's hard work the way that, say, I don't know, shoveling coal is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's hard work and you're constantly in weird positions. You're constantly contorting your body to the point where you can do things that other people can't. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I had a young guy here and he was trying to put a starter on a lawn tractor for me. And he was like an intern and he just couldn't do it. And I just walked over and I can't even see it. And you reach back and twist in and like half a turn and that nut started. And I'm like, how do you do that? It's just a lot of repetition, and anything that's a lot 100%. Of repetition in weird positions wears down joints, ligaments, tendons, carpal tunnel, all kinds of stuff like that.
Joints, backs, especially backs, knees,
backs,
feet. You know, I go through boots about every 6 months, just wearing straight through them. But I mean, your back takes a lot of the brunt, and especially with as people get older, if you put strain on your back all day, every day, over the course of 20 years, your back's going to be destroyed. It's just what it is. Even talking with chiropractors and such, there's a lot of people that, you know, as they work on cars, they slip discs, they have tons of back problems. It's terrible. It's tons of strain. And so I understand a lot of folks, you know, whenever they get older, they need to get out. I mean, otherwise it just doesn't make sense. You're going to cripple yourself for life. It's not great. And unfortunately, we don't have enough people coming in to the workforce to actually, you know, build up with all the people that are leaving the workforce. So a lot of places have a shortage of workers. Sorry, I'm reading comments.
That side combo, you got to ignore that or it'll just suck you in.
Yeah, 100%. But I have seen, I've seen on both sides with older folks and with younger folks, there are some that just don't want to do the work, and then there are some that really want to do the work. Yeah. And it's on both sides. Nobody is not guilty of this. I actually just moved to a new shop recently, and it's got older folks. Like, the guy that I'm working under, I am younger than his son. So, I mean, obviously it's pretty large age discrepancy there, but him and his coworkers, who I guess they're my coworkers now, are not super enthused about work. They, you know, if they get a car, they work on it. They'll work on it, but they're going to bitch the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to be as civil as I can with my language, but I do work in an auto shop, and it's...
No, it's all
language
right.
Kind of gets the way it gets.
We embrace the full breadth and color of the English language here at TSBC. you know, I think the some of that issue is that, because I used to see this as a young person myself in the workplace. You come into a workplace young and aggressive and willing to be ambitious, mm-hmm. and you see this tremendous potential for yourself. Well, a lot of these guys, you know, if you're 50 and you're still just doing transmission jobs and stuff like that, like, you failed to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're working hard every day, and they have no expectation anything will be any better. Right. Like, I'm just going to do this until I can't do it anymore. I'm never going to run the shop. I'm never going to, you know, move up into the office. I'm never going to be, you know, assigned, have like five techs under me or something, because if I was going to do that, I'd have done it. And I think the infection then becomes this young generation is observing this older generation. And if they did come in with ambition, it could suck it right out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't realize, like, if you do things the right way, you're not going to be that guy. You're going to be the guy he works for.
Yep. Yep, 100%.
I think that we've gotten lost, and I think part of it, you tell me, because you're of this generation, I think that the message being sent to our youth is that it is inevitable, this is what's going to happen to you. So now you're getting it, like it used to be the education system, the parents, the uncles and everything were pushing you to advance, and then you'd see that, but you also had a really good chance of identifying it for what it was, the way I just said. But now there's a much greater chance you just kind of lump yourself in and go, well, in 20 years, I'm going to be that dude over there. And I don't want to be that dude over there, so why should I work hard now?
Unfortunately, yeah, that tends to happen quite a bit. I will say in my first year, I also fell into that kind of trap. Whenever, because I worked with older gents who had been there for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
They weren't going anywhere. So I kind of fell into it, too. I understand where it is. There are different pay scales whenever you work on cars, and I've noticed that a lot of the people that are kind of like that are on an hourly kind of pay scale, which is you show up, you punch in, you're there mm-hmm. for 8 hours, you get paid for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Or flat rate, which is referred to as flat rate. It's kind of like commission, but it's not really. You get paid per the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've, for about 4 years, the majority of my time, I've been working flat rate. So the more jobs you do, the more money you make, the more you go, you know, if you do more work, you get paid more. And so I'm a lot faster than these older gents, partially because of my youth and partially because I just got out of 4 years of doing flat rate work where I need to, you know, do everything as quick as I can because I want to get paid at the end of the day.
Gotcha.
And it's, so there's upsides and downsides. And even in the flat rate world, it's not great with a lot of older folks too, or younger folks. Everybody likes to complain. It just is what it is. But I've seen a lot of people, even though they're flat rate, they get paid per job. They just don't want to do the job, which is ridiculous. And especially on whenever you're working on people's cars. I personally like to help people a lot, and working on cars is how I help them. So especially if you're working on somebody's car that they drive every day, you know, you're working on a mother's minivan or whatever, and she puts her kids in the back, it's important to do your job and do your job well, because potentially lives are at stake. So it gets a little bit extreme sometimes, but there's definitely some issues with people seeing an older generation who has kind of given up and, you know, they've done their time per se. They've made what they want to make and they're just kind of riding it out. And then you got the younger folks coming in and they want to do the same thing, but it doesn't really work that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That, because they're following the example in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right. I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, I mean, even in my day, like in the Army, we had a little bit of that problem because you would inevitably end up working, you know, as a private for like specialists that have been in for 8 years and they're still an E4.
Mm-hmm.
Or sergeants that had been in for 14 years and are in danger of being, they're, you know, E5 first level sergeants, inevitably being ready to be popped out the door. And the guy that you wanted to be had already moved up through there, and those guys were working for him, and you had that chain of command separation. I think there's a lot of that. And you tell me again if I'm on something here. I think that there are two things at play here, and we've gotten so confused we merged them together. There are people with massive work ethics, but very little ambition for advancement,
yep.
Right? So that means that guy will come to work. He will not be more than a quarter of a second late ever. And if he's 2 seconds late, he's apologetic. Mm-hmm. He will work his ass off every day. He'll take his lunch, but when that bell rings, he's back at work. And he will do his job. But if you say, hey, do you want to work late tonight? Uh-uh, I got to go to some bullshit I just made up. And the things that are necessary to advance to a higher level, they don't want to do. I want to leave the office or the shop or whatever it is. And if it's Friday at 5 o'clock when I leave, I don't even want to hear you exist until Monday morning at 8 o'clock when I show up. But they'll be there. And there's nothing wrong with their work ethic, but they don't have the ambition to advance. And then there's people that have the work ethic and the ambition. Like they will step up, they will move a door out of the way, they'll take it off the hinges, whatever I want to be more. And when they get to a point in the company where like I've hit a glass ceiling, they just leave and go do it somewhere else so that they can keep advancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that. And I think the two things get conflated. And some of the people that have great work ethic are branded as though they don't because they don't want to work extra hours. They don't want to advance. They don't want to take additional training.
So actually, that's going to be kind of the biggest thing I would like to go into today, because really, especially with the younger generation, and I've talked with some other folks that I know about this, you know, and whenever you start a job, they give you basically a list of responsibilities and what they want out of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey, I want you to show up 8 to 5, you get a half hour lunch break. I need you to do, you know, work on cars all day or whatever. You need to do this and, you know, go from there. You know, this is the wage that we agreed upon, which is all pretty standard, well and done, great, whatever. But there's a lot of people that will overwork other people. So, you know, I'm going to use cars as an example a lot because that's obviously I know. So, a lot of people, they'll come in, they'll work circles around other people, make tons of hours, do all the work that they need to do, plus some. But then, you know, over the course of a couple of years, there's no advancement for them. They're still in the same spot. They might have a little bit of a raise, but, you know, they want to, even if they're doing their job better than others, it's easy to see sometimes whenever other folks, you know, go up. Or nobody goes up, then it's kind of stagnated, and it's just like, well, why am I doing this if, you know, all I'm going to do is just be in the exact same position 5 years from now? There's a lot of job jumping. That's actually, honestly, job jumping, I know it's not preferred, and, you know, whenever it's on a resume, it usually doesn't look great. However, job jumping is pretty much the only way that people can advance in the labor force, especially with manual labor kind of stuff. Because, you know, say I work for a year and I'm still making barely any more than what I have started with, you know, I can go jump a job and get a $2 or $3 raise, you know, so it, for doing the exact same work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, whenever you jump jobs, obviously it makes it harder to progress upwards. You'll get a better pay and potentially better benefits, but you really don't progress as far as, like, you know, moving up to management or up to higher positions inside of a company. It doesn't happen as much.
I disagree. I say if that's the case, you're doing it wrong.
Potentially. Right? You might be right.
Because I found in my history that the best way to move up was to move over and up.
Mm-hmm.
That when a company wants you, you have better negotiating capability at that moment than you ever will ever again, unless you become some kind of huge rainmaker for that company. And part of it is I learned early on what you're talking about right now about not getting raises and what have you. And tell me if this sounds familiar. Well, I think that I'm worth this much. Well, I'd love to do it, but I don't have it right now. I can't hire a new person at that rate. But what I can say is if you work out in 6 months, then we can talk about it. But when 6 months comes and you fully worked out, well, I just don't have the money right now. I can give you like a shitty 3 or 4% raise. But the number we just both agreed to 6 months ago is impossible. It cannot be done. Like, I would have to climb up on the sun and pray to the god of Pluto to get this to happen. And it's just not doable. And then they'll hire somebody like a week later into a position above you.
Yeah, isn't that some?
I mean, and that's why I've always taken the point is, I think one of the things that young people have lost the art of is proactive bullshitting on a resume. So I think that people are writing their resume based on the things that they do most of the time instead of the things that they do at the edge of what they do. That one of the things we need to teach people is present yourself as able to do everything that you're able to do. And if you've done it once in that job competently, list it like it's a primary skill set, because that's how you go from applying to another like level one tech job to like a senior tech job or whatever it is in your space. And I don't think we've conveyed that. We have taught people to like fill out forms. So that's how people write resume. Like they're filling out a form, and you might as well just take whatever the HR Karen cut and paste it into the job app you applied for, and then just cut and paste that into your resume. And that is a recipe to just get the same job for a couple dollars more. That's what happens.
It does happen that way quite a bit. I do think that a lot of people don't know how to write resumes correctly. Unfortunately, that's just something that a lot of people aren't taught. Or even if they are taught it, they don't absorb the information like they're supposed to. They just regurgitate, which is another issue. But so, for example, I actually lost my job recently. That's why I moved to this new shop. I was paid more than people that had been there for 4 years. And so, yeah, I jump around.
You negotiated from a position of strength. You want me to work for you and I don't yet.
Yes. And, so, I mean, obviously I was I think I might've been a little bit better than them. But you know, it does kind of look disparaging whenever somebody just walks into the shop that you've been working at for 4 years and they're already making more than you. It kind of looks bad, but honestly, that's kind of their own damn fault. But he's a good guy. I'm still friends with him, but he made some mistakes. There is an issue with, for example, the best way for a mechanic to move up is to become a service writer. And then from a service writer, you can go to management or foreman or whatever positions. I can't get a goddamn service writer job for the life of me, even though I've been a service writer before, which is funny. I know why. Realistically, that's a job that where you're not working on the cars, and the mechanics are producers. Advisors are salesmen. And so you don't really want to lose a mechanic. It's just not a good idea, because then you can lose production. So I understand why, and you have to move to a different company, really, if you want to get to a service writer position. It's just the way it is. But I think a lot of young folks, whenever they go and try to get to a upward position, and they're given that spiel of, you know, oh, well, we can't do that right now or whatever, a lot of them will just say, okay, well, screw you, I'm going to leave, and then they don't know what to do after that, which I don't know why they would do that, but a lot of folks, they go and they try to get better, and because they didn't actually prepare for moving to an upward position, they weren't actually prepared to lose the job, or quit the job, rather, which is more common now, and then get that job at a different place. They really just go straight for, well, this is what I've been doing, so I'm just going to keep doing this, and then try the same thing. Next thing you know, they've quit 5 places in a row, and they're still in the same spot, possibly making more, but usually not.
You can do the move over thing quite a bit, but you can also overdo it to where somebody looks at it and goes, no, there's something wrong here, right?
Yeah.
Whenever I interviewed people, moving didn't bother me. Moving and not advancing was a shortcut to the shredder for your resume. Like, I want to see advancement in your moves. Like, you're young, your first move or two, you walk across the street for a dollar, I don't care. I get that. But as that starts to build up, and I'm looking at somebody that's worked for 4 or 5 companies, there better be some upward movement, or you're not what I'm looking for, unless I'm looking for, you know, a tech. And when I say that, it could be in business, it could be on automotive, it could be a framer. If I'm just looking for a worker, sure, I'll hire that person. But again, I'm going to pay them a rate commensurate with average. And if they work out, they work out, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think, though? Like, I do think I'm trying not to. I always try to catch myself when I feel like I'm beating up or punching down on people that are 30 years younger than me. But I do think there is a problem with work ethics.
There's
a disconnect. And you work with these people, so it's not some old fuck like me bitching about it. As someone standing right next to the person that's your age, similar background, has the same opportunities you do, or at least did, where do you think the disconnect has come from?
So I think people tend to fall into vices very easily nowadays, especially with the fast media, fast whatever, you know, everything comes and goes really quickly. So people kind of get, especially like social media is not good. A lot of younger folks are on their phone a lot. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of people, as you kids and your damn phones and whatever. That's not necessarily what I mean, because I have a phone. I will check my email a couple times a day or whatever. Sometimes I need to look up info for a car for whatever I'm doing. But some people are just glued to their phones. I work with a young kid who anytime he's not like actively working on a car, he's looking down on his phone. And that is a big thing that we need to get rid of. But then you also have a lot of people who say, well, I'm not paid enough for that. I think a lot of our issue nowadays, and I had this issue earlier a couple of years ago, is that our pay has stagnated, especially with labor positions. Pay hasn't really changed much at all in about 10 years. I mean, even if you look at, I have BLS.gov. What does that stand for again? I don't care. But I have government, you know, this is the government's info.
Stats. Okay.
Stats, you know, for mean wages. So, you know, they're mean wages, not medians or whatever. And the pay hasn't, I think, like, the pay for last year, it went up like 0.4% for, you know, an automotive repair positions. This 0.4% is ridiculous, especially with how complex everything is getting. And so I think a lot of people, whenever they look at jobs, obviously you want a good pay because everything is getting more and more expensive, and it's harder to keep your bills paid. for everybody, not just younger folks. But you know, they look at the pay and they're like, why the hell would I want to go work this backbreaking job making $17 an hour? Or I could go work at McDonald's and make $15 an hour and, you know, screw off every night with my friends. It's, while we can, it's easy to hate on younger folks for, obviously, you know, they need to be more attentive and, you know, time to, you know, if you got time to lean, time to clean kind of thing. But they also, they're also, not all of them are, I got to stop looking at these comments. Not all of them, you can't, trust me. Yeah. So, not all of them are actually having an issue with working. They're having an issue with working for a pay that is not adequate for the amount of effort that they're going to put in.
How much do you think though? Cause we're talking, when I'm talking about this, I'm always coming from the standpoint of, you don't make shit your first couple of years in any job. You're going to make garbage wages your first couple of years. So how much of this is reality and how much of this is a self-fulfilling prophecy that, because I really, you know, I come down on education and all, but I just wonder how much is being primed into the minds of young people that this is the way things are. So it's all they see when they hit the workplace, especially like at least you came into a trade out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to imagine the person that comes through 4 years of college being told by all these liberal professors that live in these ivory towers who have it completely freaking made themselves that this is what society does to young people, that they're coming into this with that expectation. And then when that first job really is a dog shit wage, which it's supposed to be,
it will always be. Yeah.
Then it will always be because they won't do the things to get past it.
100%. A lot of the issue, especially with kids that go to college, actually, I just listened to your podcast the other day where you were talking about the enrollment cliff.
Yeah.
Which talked about this quite a bit. You talked about this quite a bit, was everybody is kind of told, oh, well, this is what you're worth, even if that's not really what you're worth.
Yeah.
It's very common. And even if you go to a lower position, so like you go to a tire shop and you're just swapping tires out, people do for some reason think that they're supposed to make more. And I think part of that issue is that there are so many easy jobs that you can go into where you will make more. It's just like
or the same.
Yeah. Right? It's like, yeah. It's an easier job where you make more or the same. It's like, why would I want to go? Which is unfortunate. I think actually that's the bigger issue, is that we have so many jobs where you work mindless tasks and you're not paid a mindless task level, you're paid higher than that, which is a little bit ridiculous. So you have people who, you know, go work at Walmart and they make $20 an hour for some reason, even though they're just stocking shelves. But then how are you supposed to get those people into a more skilled job whenever the pay is the same or less? And so, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, instead of actually looking at advancement, which they don't most of the time. Most of the time they look at a job and it's like, hey, this is the job, because they don't see advancement.
Yeah.
They just see, oh, well, I'm getting paid $15 an hour to do tires, or I could go make $15 an hour working at McDonald's. You know, they're probably going to pick working at McDonald's because working on tires is kind of hard sometimes. And I think that's a lot of the thing, is people don't want to advance, or they're not willing to look to advance. A lot of people nowadays, if you go to, say, a college, or actually, no, not even a college, if you go to a high school, most of the kids in high school, for lack of a better term, they're all idiots. They don't know what they want. And even the ones that do know what they want, most of them are often going to college. And so then by the time they get through college, they're expecting a lot, and they're not going to get a lot the first couple of years. My girlfriend just finished up college last year, and she's actually the reason why we moved up to Green Bay in Wisconsin. And her job, she got an internship right out of college, and so we came here. Her job right now, I think, is making less than I made like 3 years ago.
Sure.
And you know, she just went through 4 years of college for it and has, you know, a bunch of student debt. And a lot of people are confused by that, where it's like, I don't know why they're confused. Again, I think this is, you touched on this quite a bit with your podcast you had a couple weeks ago about that. But, you know, they go through all of this and they expect to make a wage that they're just simply not going to make for being at an entry level position. And I, you know, I even tried to talk to my girlfriend before she even finished college. I was like, you know, you could probably get the same job or a similar job for a similar pay without any actual, you know, going through college. You don't necessarily need a degree. And even whenever you're trying to talk to somebody who you're close to, they still fight you over it. They still think they need the degree to get anything, which is ridiculous. Obviously, we know you don't need to all the time. Sometimes you do want one, but that's besides the point.
Well, real quick, I know I told you to leave the comments alone, but I did start this one. I think it hits perfect on what you're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. Matthew here said it's just the number of millennials and Gen Z that won't apply because they don't have the, quote, right, unquote, degree is baffling. And I think that part of this is, and you got to understand, whenever I say, like, this is how the young generation, I'm inferring right off the thing. And we made them that way. And when I say we, I mean all the older people that have made all the decisions that they didn't get to make, like what their education would be like. I think we have created a group, and I would say this is like mid-30s down, that is exactly the opposite of what we were as Gen Xers and boomers and tweeners, which is we were rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I don't mean rebellious in just a direct stupid way. Like all kids do stupid shit. Like we were all stupid. The only reason we don't look as stupid is because there weren't cell phone cameras and social media when we were. So all our 100%. Shit disappeared. Right. Mm-hmm. But we were naturally rebellious. The last thing you would describe Gen Xers as, especially in our heyday, is rule followers. We were rule breakers all the time. Even the goody two-shoes looking kid was an Eddie Haskell. They were that until the backs turned, and when they were with their boys, they were rule breakers. Kids today, to me, feel like rule followers.
Yep.
So if the thing says you have to tick these boxes, if you don't, then you're like, well, I can't do that. Right? There's a compliance mindset that we have programmed into these younger generations, so they fail to take shots when you have employers begging for somebody to take a shot. They will go, no, you don't qualify, but I'll give you a shot anyway. Mm-hmm. I've had three jobs in my career time before I did this by myself that required degrees. One required a master's. The only time I've ever been into a college is a guest lecturer. I don't have a single credit hour.
Yep.
But we didn't see Karen's cut and paste from HR, a job requirement as an absolute. We just saw it as, well, that's what you would like, but maybe you can't get, or maybe let me show you what I've done for somebody else. Maybe you won't care anymore. And I think that's holding back a whole generation from realizing there are, stop trying to do it in the conventional way because that's what everybody else is doing. So you do not stand out, if that makes sense.
Well, one, if you're going to do anything stupid, kids, don't bring your phones with you. And two, two, we are definitely, a lot of the younger folks are definitely rule followers. And part of that is because we live in a surveillance state. And that's without a shadow of a doubt. There's more cameras, more people watching you at all times. Even like kids used to sneak out all the time, which obviously they still do. It happens. But say kids have a phone. Almost all of them nowadays have a Life 360 on their phone, which is basically like a tracking app. So, you know, anytime the phone is on, you can track where it is. And so, you know, parents will just track where their kids are at based on their phones. It's like I said, kids, don't bring your phones with you. but we do live in a time now where everything is.
I don't even know what to say. I'm a generation that we grew up making a living selling kegs of beer and bush parties for $2 a head. If we had headphones, I can tell you that we would have left them like all at one person's house whose brother was home and would pretend to be their dad and say, yeah, they're all here, but they're outside or something. We would have. I don't know.
Basically, since I'm not going to say the time you were born, but pretty close.
Yeah.
Kids are being watched. And so, you know, nowadays, if they do anything out of line, it's like right away somebody's there to discipline them for breaking the rules. Even folks that are older than me, not a lot older than me, but a couple of years, like the kid who, not the kid, rather, the man who I made more than, total rule follower. He would not go against any single rule ever, which is a shame. Life is so much more fun when you break the rules. That's not an admission of guilt. So, but we do have an issue where kids don't break the rules anymore, and that's true. To be fair, whenever I was a kid growing up, I don't know if I ever left the neighborhood that I lived in. You know, whereas like kids used to back in the day, as we say, ride their bikes all the way across town. Next thing you know, you're in some quarry throwing rocks at old equipment or something. That sounds like a script to a movie. I don't know which one, but
it sounds like my, it sounds like you've been reading my journals from when I was a kid is what it sounds like.
Oh man, I don't have time to read anymore, but, people don't do that anymore. And there's some parts of that is because there's so many things to do inside nowadays. It's like almost every kid nowadays has a phone or a tablet or video games or something. But there are a lot of times people are punished nowadays for going outside. It's like if you have a kid running around town, you know, and it's not even necessarily completely the parents' fault. It's like some random neighbor will be like, hey, these kids are being unruly, and call the cops on them then. And so now...
What unruly means is they existed in a place that Karen didn't want them to.
Exactly. That's it's like they're riding their bikes on the sidewalk in front of her house, and she can't have that. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
So really, a lot of people are punished for trying to explore anything anymore. And it's like if you want to go out having fun with your friends... It's basically a no-no. You can't do that anymore. And that's really common nowadays for, you know, just about anything. So because of it, a lot of kids, they just stay inside, do what they're told, because then they don't get in trouble for it. And unfortunately, that's led to us to where we are now, where
it's
nowadays...
the invisible fence for humans, right?
Yeah,
you know, the invisible fence for dogs. You put the collar on the dog. You bury the wire. The dog gets near the wire. They get a beep. Then they get a vibrate. Then they get shocked.
Mm-hmm.
You do that long enough, and the dog... you could turn the fence off, and you could... the collar could have no power in it. And
yeah,
the dog
dog's not gonna go near.
That's the spot where the bad shit happens. And I'm not... so since the experience has been negative... for being inquisitive, investigative, assertive, ambitious, then the behavior's been bred out. And I wonder how much of that's by design versus happenstance.
Potentially. I'm not going to say anything per se on how much is by design, because I honestly don't know, and I'm not going to pretend that I do. But the 100%, it's nowadays, if you do anything against the status quo, you're going to get pushback, and most likely it's not going to be good pushback. And so, I mean, every time, it's just anytime you do anything that's not normal, people are going to find some way to demonize you or punish you or whatever, which is unfortunate. And honestly, that's led to, I think, a lot of our issues, which is a shame, because there are some actual people who are younger people, obviously, that are do actually have lots of good ideas and could do a lot, but because they're so afraid of failure and being punished for something that they have no reason to be punished for, they're not willing to go for it. It's like, you can send an application to a job that you're totally unqualified for, and what's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to say no? Like,
yeah.
What's the big deal, you know? And so a lot of people, unfortunately, have kind of fallen into this state where they just don't want to anymore. Because
but they'll get on a dating app where they'll be swiped left 1,000 times for one right.
I don't know about that. But they, I'm not sure what that's all about, to be honest with you.
Maybe because you don't know you were rejected?
Potentially.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I didn't try. Actually, that's
allegedly.
What it was. Allegedly. I do remember I got rejected one time. I didn't try any other times.
Yeah.
But we do. I don't know about that. It's not really my kind of thing.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a lot of people, it's easier. Well, actually, no, I do know. There's no real punishment for that, but there's a really good reward, and it's very quick.
Mm.
That's what it is. It's not necessarily. Yes. And yeah. So that they know it really quickly, whereas like if you send a job interview or a job resume or whatever, or an application, you don't know. And so then you're just kind of left with this, oh, what's going to happen? Mm. And even though obviously probably nothing is going to happen and nobody's going to care and they're, it doesn't matter. But I think that's what it is that there's no reward in it. And obviously a lot of people nowadays, they need the instant gratification. They need the reward. They need to know like really very quickly, which is unfortunate because then they're not willing to put in the work to actually find things that could be much better for them, but it's just going to take more time, which is unfortunate because, again, I do think that there are some actual people who are extremely good workers and can do a lot, but they just are unwilling to because they're so paralyzed by fear of failure or and or rejection, which I've been thrown around so much I don't really care anymore. I'll probably get into that in another time. I've had a lot going on before. I've been beat down. It's not great, you know, things happen, but people don't really want to pick themselves back up anymore. That's another big thing is, you know, if they get kicked down once, they're just like, okay, that's it. I tried. I'm not going to do that again. Even though if they did try, they could succeed extremely well, but they're just not willing to, which is unfortunate.
What do you think we do about it? Like, I think there are some issues with innately humans are somewhat lazy unless we feel motivation either due to reward or we actually enjoy the activity. Like we tend to be pretty lazy. I think of one young man I know that I've talked to kind of as a mentor, and you know, I'm like, you need a budget and you need your resume on the street with a good cover letter and you need to expand your network. Mm-hmm. And every time I talk to him, Did you do this? No. Okay. Why? I don't have time. Mm. But some bitch, when tickets go on sale for opening day of the Rangers game, he's up at 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure, like, he has time for that. He has time to take half a day off from work to go to the game because it starts on a Wednesday or whatever, right? But doesn't have time to, like, do a budget in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's an individual problem. I think there's a lot of that in, like, 30-something down. I'm not even going to say there's not a lot of it in my age and up, but it seems more prevalent there. But I also do think there are some structural things like we've been talking about. What do you think we could do to turn this around? Because I actually think most young people do have somewhere in them
mm-hmm.
tremendous potential that's being not realized. And I think this is a problem. And I think what arrogant people my age and older have done is convinced ourselves it's a problem for them.
Yep. Well,
yeah, it's a problem for them, and it's going to fucking be a problem for us, too, because mm-hmm. we're all going to be 70, 80 years old one day relying on a bunch of people that can't do anything to provide for us when we can't do anything because we're old. Mm-hmm. So maybe we need to get on board with fixing this, and if I made you czar of youth work or some shit, what do you think we could do to improve this?
So obviously, it's not exactly going to happen overnight or anything, but I think the biggest thing is if you don't want your kids to, or anybody that you know, rather, if you don't want them to be pushed down to the point where they're not willing to take those risks to actually improve anything, first thing, take them out of school. School is completely detrimental. Obviously, I'm not going to say I never learned anything, because I definitely did, but for the amount that you learn, there's too many detrimental effects where it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, I'm not going to say that everybody can get their kids out of school because sometimes they can't. I believe everybody should. If you have kids, don't put them in school. But get them in school and then get them actually working on something. Find out what they're actually passionate about before they get to the point where they have to work for a living. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. And so a lot of people, they've kind of lost that already. But you need to find what they're passionate about, because if they don't, then obviously they're going to fall into that slump of, well, this is, I go to work, come back, and that's all I do. It's like, they don't have any passion for what they do. And you, what's the saying? If you love what you do, you're never going to work a day in your life. Which is very true. People that don't love what they do, obviously they're going to have an issue with going in, doing the work as well as they want or should, and then obviously improving where they're at. But a lot of people, because of how they're so pushed down early on, I think that's a bigger thing, is that you need to catch them early. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen for almost everybody. And so then you're going to be retroactively trying to fix things afterwards. And obviously, trying to tear down a house and then build it back up is harder than just building it back up once. So really, we need to start young. And for a lot of folks, it's too late. But if it's too late for them to basically start young, the next thing you need to do is you need to find what they're passionate about. What was that movie? Office Space? Was that it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. I know a little bit about the storyline. Nobody spoil anything too much. I already know the ending, unfortunately. But the big thing is there. He has no passion. You know, if you have no passion, you're just going to come in and be a zombie at work.
He's talking to the shrink at one point, and he said, you know, nothing ever changes. And every day that I work is a little bit worse than the day before. So I know that every day when I wake up, today is going to be the worst day of my life.
Yes, 100%.
Right? Like, and even the shrink's like, and it's a comedy all, but even the shrink's like, whoa, that's bad. He's like, shit, I got to hypnotize your ass because I got nothing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality for almost everybody nowadays. Is that a lot of people, they go to work and they're just a zombie at work. They have no passion for what they do. And there are some jobs that need to get done, and not everybody's going to have the passion to do those jobs. However, I do think that most everybody can find a job that they're passionate about. Even if they're not doing it full time, they can do it on a part time kind of thing or a side gig, whatever. And for example, I'm very passionate about cars and helping people because, you know, everybody needs to drive a car. That's not going to change anytime soon. It might in the near future. I don't really care. But, you know, even if I couldn't work on cars for whatever reason, really, I still like helping people. So I'm still going to find some way to help people. And a lot of people, they don't have a passion for really anything. They don't explore enough to find a passion. And so, for example, if, you know, you have a coworker that you can just tell is absolutely miserable doing their job and they're just getting the bare minimum out of it, you should try to help them find their passion. And it's not easy. I have a friend who I'm trying to help him find his passion. He loves to make music. Excuse me, voice cracks and stuff. He loves to make music. And so I'm trying to get him to make music. And man, it's an uphill battle. It's just like, will you just shut up and let me help you out for a minute?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, even people who, even if they know their passion, the hard part is actually getting them to pursue their passion. Mostly because obviously they're going to say they don't have time. We know they do, but they're going to say they don't. It's repetition. You got to wear them down over time.
If you have time for Call of Duty or whatever the fuck people are playing today, you have time for your passion.
Right, exactly. And so, really, I don't see any reason why. Actually, I'm going to take that back. I do see some reasons why people wouldn't throw as much time into their passion as they can, but really, all of them are stupid. Say you have a house, and obviously I know houses are starting to fall apart and whatever and whatnot. But, you know, this guy, he wakes up, he goes to work, comes home, eats dinner with his wife, and, you know, plays with the dogs, and that's about it. And obviously you can do more than that. And people will always make excuses, and unfortunately, if you really want to help people, you basically need to beat their excuses. Which is stupid because they constantly make more excuses. It's not easy to. You basically need to pull them out of the matrix, kind of. And I'm not saying that as in, you know, the whole world's matrix, whatever. But they're stuck in the matrix of, I go to work, I come home, this is my life. You have to unplug them and be able to be like, hey, you have this time that you're at work, and then you have this time that you're not doing anything of any importance, pursue something. And obviously, it's you need to produce a relationship with this person to be able to kind of force this on them, because that's what you really have to do. You have to force it on them. They're not going to do it themselves. You know, make, for example...
Do you think it's that they don't have the ambition, or they have so little faith that it'll do anything for them that they don't do it out of a sense of apathy?
I think it's a faith thing, because... Which is makes no sense to me, because obviously you can see everybody be successful in different career fields.
Yeah.
You know, you make podcasts and, you know, you're not maybe the biggest podcaster, but you go and talk to people for a couple hours a day, and that's your job. Obviously, there's more to it. But
yeah,
really, you could do anything. There are people on YouTube. Whenever YouTube became a big thing, everybody's like, oh, I'm going to make a YouTube channel, and then they never do. And obviously, you can. It's super easy. I'm not going
to
say
seconds of work to make a channel.
Yeah.
People talk about it like they're going to freaking program the next AI machine to like beat Kasparov in a chess match. It's like, well, one day I'll set one. You could have done it while you told me you were going to do it.
Right? It's like the entire time that you're complaining that you can't do it, you could have already started this 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You could have already had, you know, however many followers you need is really, the longer that they put it off, obviously, is the harder it's going to be. Is the easiest time to do it was yesterday, the second easiest time is today. And so, unfortunately, it's just people want to make excuses, and whether that's because they're afraid of failure, I'm not a humble mechanic, whether that's because they're afraid of failure or whatever else, you know, it's not necessarily a big deal whenever it's easy to start something. And as soon as you start something, it's easier to keep it going. But people just don't want to start anything anymore. And I do believe it's possibly because of the fear of failure. But then you also have people who they just don't want to because they think it's pointless. And yeah. So you have to convince them that it's not pointless, and that even though they're going to have to put in a decade of work to actually get to a point where they're successful, that's fine because you're already working your job anyways. So it's not like you're going to be homeless, and you can just put your spare time into actually, you know, producing what you want to do. And I've tried to explain this to folks older than me, because frankly, the folks younger than me often don't listen. And actually, most of the time, the older folks don't listen either. People don't like to listen to me. But, you know, I've only been able to get one person to actually listen to me and be like, hey, maybe I should start doing this. And I think he's actually trying to start selling bicycle parts on eBay right now, which, hey, that's an easy thing to do. And, yeah. You know, literally anything, you could do anything. And, you know, say you have too many potential productive passions, as what he said, do everything. That's, I already have a good job. It's not like I need something else, but obviously I want to be able to work for myself. And that's the preferred thing to do, is if you work for yourself, it's not necessarily easier, but then you don't need to work for somebody else.
Yep.
You can have some pride in that. And so I've actually, on the side, I've been doing just about everything. I'm trying to teach myself how to play bass. I have a 3D printer that I'm making 3D helmets with, which I'm trying to get a couple of them built before I actually want to sell them, so I can know that I can replicate it and do it right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I work on cars on the side too. Is if you have passions, just do all of them. Instead of trying to cherry pick one and be like, oh, well, this one can work better than this one, just do all of them. Because then it's easier. What'll happen?
You love by doing a lot of things and focusing on what you like, and then when you focus on your like long enough, you'll find your love.
Yeah.
Like, I think people need to start taking an approach toward careers the way we take an approach toward dating. Right? So we've conditioned people to believe, like, you got to figure out what you want to be by the time you're in 11th grade and start applying for college, or you're going to be a loser. Right? Yep. Like, that's and it would be like, you need to know who you're going to marry by the time you're in 10th grade. Like, we have arranged marriages from the past. And if that one doesn't work out, then you're fucked. right? And you'll never be married and you'll never have a wife or a husband, right? Imagine how stupid that sounds, though. I'm about to turn a corner to that, maybe being related to this next. But if that's your mindset, then so like I know this guy was I served in the Army with his first wife, went to school to be an architect because daddy was an architect. And frankly, I knew right from the beginning this was bad marriage because she had daddy issues. Right. Like, so daddy issues, follows daddy's career path, goes through being an architect is not easy. Right. It's like artist meets engineer. And it, in some ways, it doesn't take as long, but it's kind of like being a doctor. Like you come out of school with an architectural degree. You don't go start architecting. You go intern under somebody. Then you pass an exam and you have a certain number of years and then you can go architect. Like you can actually practice by yourself. Right. So she goes through all that shit and realizes I hate this. And the last time I talked to them when they were a them, she was working for a company designing closets, like basically drag CAD designing closets. And I'm sure her background was helpful, but totally unnecessary.
Yep.
So she never dated her career choices, I guess is the way I'm putting it, right? So like we date to find the person we love. We don't like go, oh, I met you in second grade and we danced, so we're going to get married.
Yep.
Right? And I think that's like the approach we're taking now is you got to figure out what you want to do and go do that thing. And specialize in it for the rest of your life. And I think that that also makes people like, well, fuck, I don't want to do that, so I guess I'll do nothing.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not a great example of this because I started working on cars almost right out of high school, and I've just been doing it for the past 5 years. But I have met a lot of people.
I get the feeling if you hated it, you would have went and done – I mean, you got lucky. Sometimes you meet your love of your life when you're 18 years old. Right? So you found what you were looking for. You got lucky. But just talking to you, I kind of feel like if you're like, fucking working on cars sucks, you would have went and done something else.
A lot of people, especially in being mechanics, you have to pay for your own tools and everything. Yeah. And so a lot of people, you'll sink a lot of money into tools. I already have, you know, I've only been it for 5 years or so, going on six, and I have probably close to $65,000 in tools. And I have almost all of them paid off. So, and you definitely have some people where a sunk cost fallacy is like, well, I have this much money into it. There's no point in me backing out of it now. It's like, well, if you hate it, sell your tools. You're going to probably make, you're going to, you know, pay them off and then you'll probably have some money extra. Do whatever you want. It, you know, I did start with a Ford. It doesn't really matter because, you know, even though you've put a lot of effort into something, it doesn't matter. You just throw it away and just start over again. A lot of people are scared of that. And I mean, understandably, you know, is like I have a down payment of a house just sitting in this workshop. And, you know, so unfortunately, that's just sometimes you're going to lose and sometimes you're going to win. And people need to be willing to take risks. And
whenever a school teacher tells me about the $500 they had to put into the decoration of their classroom,
I
just tell them a picture of a mechanic standing in front of a Snap-on box.
Yeah, I laugh.
Like, this person just spent half your annual salary to have enough tools to do their job. Welcome to the real world. But, like, as you're saying this, the other side of this, let me see, I starred this.
Oh, boy.
Where is it now? Here, Tom said, I think telling a generation of kids the world was going to end in 10 years didn't help either.
Yep.
Like this fatalism, the world is going to end because if we don't act in 10 years, then we all know we're not going to, like, the oceans will boil us all or some shit. But I also think that ties into another thing that doesn't seem related to this that might be. And I'm just thinking, like, when I was a kid, I wasn't running out trying to get married right away. But it was a reasonable expectation a man would grow up, find a career, find a wife, and have a family. Right?
Not anymore.
You want passion? You want passion? Have kids. You will have passion for your kids. Even if you don't think you will, you will. And when you have a family unit and a home and a roof over the head of people you need to take care of, then you become very committed. To your future, and you start thinking about their future and your future together. And so you seek advancement. You seek to do better. You seek to have work-life balance, right? You know, I got to kill myself at work, but I also, when I get home, I'm here for to be dad. And I think that, like, if you asked in 1985, a bunch of teenage boys especially, I think girls too, honestly, but boys 15 to 18 in high school, do you expect to become a husband and father someday? The vast majority would have said yes. And if you said, do you expect that someday you will own a house? Even the guy that knew he was going to go work at a concrete factory or some shit and thought, I'm going to buy like a cheap house, would have said yes. And I think if you had asked girls that, I know they would have said yes. I will be married. We'll have a house. Some would have said they were going to stay at home. Some would have said they would go to work, but they had that expectation. I think that the, I don't know what the number would be, but I think the number would be dramatically lower 35 years in the future. Now, like, I don't think that you'd get the same, anywhere near the same number of people. And if I don't have that in my future, then what's driving me to find my passion and apply it?
I've had this conversation a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah. With my girlfriend. Because I do know, I've seen a lot of studies and infos, statistics, whatever, of people are having kids later and later in life, or they're just not having kids. And especially, I think part of that is that women especially, you need women to have kids, obviously. It's just a fact of life. And nowadays, women are more pushed towards making a career and not having a family. And I'm not saying that every woman needs to have a family, but there is definitely a very large amount of women, especially nowadays, especially younger women, who they don't want to have kids anymore. And part of that is because they're focusing on their career, or they just have so little faith in the world with how unstable everything is. I had this conversation with my girlfriend quite often. She just doesn't want to bring a kid into this world right now because of how everything is going. I mean, you know, obviously it's partially is kind of my fault because I look at the news often. And so obviously there's a lot of stuff that is not very sure for the future, but I still think it's pretty sure that the planet's still going to be here in 30 years. So unfortunately, a lot of people, especially younger ones, whatever reason they have, they don't want to have kids anymore. And, you know, especially younger guys, they're concerned about being able to support a family and, you know, being able
being destroyed by family court and end up paying for kids that they never get to see for 20 years, too. And there's a reason they feel that way.
There 100% is. Unfortunately, the family courts right now are so geared in favor of females, even if they're not the better care provider. Obviously, that's another topic that we could always get into, but I do have a friend who had a kid last year, and it was kind of, they didn't expect it to happen, it just did. And for lack of a better term, his girlfriend at the time is a psychopath. She abused him constantly and would always throw stuff at him, whatever. And I was like, why the hell are you having a kid with her? And it's like, well, it was an accident. I don't think he would have had a kid.
Accidentally fell in your vagina. Okay.
something like that.
Whoops. Shit.
But, I mean, really, he wasn't planning on having a kid anytime soon. Obviously, he wants a kid, and he loves his son. He had a son. And he loves his son very much. But he's still constantly fighting to have, you know, be able to have his kid. Just, I think they split up and they were doing like a shared custody kind of thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for everybody, actually, I think we're going to see in the near future, we're actually going to see a large explosion of people wanting to have kids.
I agree.
Mostly on the male side, but hopefully more females want to have kids because obviously they're important for it. But you know, as far as obviously I'm young and I still go on social media. I'm trying to limit that obviously because it's not super conducive to working on everything. But there has been a pretty large resurgence on the Christian mindset and, you know, finding people finding their faith in God. it's not really the God I want to believe in, but a lot of people are becoming more religious now. Very quickly.
That happened in the 70s, too, by the way. There was a big kind of revival of faith. And, you know, I may not join in with that faith, but I'm not going to say it's not a good thing for society as a whole, because it is.
I'm not gonna hate on somebody for believing in whatever faith they want to believe in, as long as they hold it true to their heart. But I've seen a lot of, especially with younger kids who are just coming out of high school, a lot of them are very, have a lot of faith now. And obviously a lot of people, whenever they have religion, most of them are more likely to have a family, because they want, you know, in most religions, I believe, don't quote me on it, 'cause I'm not super versed in religions, but most of them use spreading your seed, rather, or, you know, creating a family is like a religious act partially. And so I believe we might actually see a lot more people having kids in the near future, which is good. Obviously we need more children. I do understand why people don't. And I think Gen Z especially, they're kind of, I'm worried that they're not going to have a whole lot of kids, just because, you know, whether they think the world's going to end or there's going to be an economic disaster or nukes are going to fall out of the sky, whatever they want to think, a lot of them are not really interested in, you know, producing children and families. Whatever's the reason, it doesn't really matter per se. It's, we still need more families. And definitely if people did have families, you know, actually, no, I'm going to take that back. I did work with a fella who had two kids and a wife, and boy, he was probably one of the laziest people I've ever met. So, I mean, it's not a guarantee.
No, it's not.
But I do think if people have families, they're going to be more inclined to work harder.
There's always averages, right? Like, because when I say, like, young people are lazy, well, you know, you're
obviously not,
like, not
all of them are.
Right. And I made a post about this yesterday. It's a Generation Z should be Generation O, with O standing for outrage. Right. But I ended it with a disclaimer saying there's exceptional people across all generations. And if 100%. You need this disclaimer, then it probably you don't understand it. Right. Like, you're 100%. Still upset. Right. Like, yeah. I also think, like, maybe part of this is how your generation grew up and my generation to a degree, but like my kids' generation forward. In the 1950s, getting a divorce in this country was probably way too hard.
Yeah.
But like so many things, we overcompensated and made it far too easy. And so we have generations of people who've grown up, like their parents were divorced, they're divorced, their kids have seen that. When Thanksgiving comes, there's 8 houses to go to because family split and split and split.
Yep.
Everybody's always fighting, and they grew up and think, why the fuck would I do this to myself?
I won't say I do believe is by design. As they call it, the nuclear family.
Yeah, they're
100% trying to destroy the nuclear family. Which I understand why a more divided, you know, that's an easy way to divide people. If you have, you know, say, for example, I lived with my mother, never met my father, but I lived with my mother. And so whenever you divide people like that, say you have a split up family, even my girlfriend's family, they split up whenever she was, I think 12. And so it's super common nowadays. People, I don't know what, well, I do partially know why. It's extremely common, almost unheard of for people to have, you know, complete families. It's more common for people to have incomplete families.
Agreed.
It's 100% an extremely common thing right now. If you went and asked 1,000 young people, probably about 90% of them would say that there's some issues in their family somewhere, somehow. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. I do think that having complete families when raising kids is obviously better. I think every kid needs a mother and a father. And really, whenever you approach a family that only has one or has both, but they're separated, you're going to have a lot more issues. I'm not going to say that my family is great. I did come from a broken home, as I said, but there's a lot going on. But, you know, I have an older sister who I'm not going to say she makes the best life decisions, but, you know, she's alive. I know that, I think. And, you know, for a long time, I had a lot of anger that I could never really direct correctly. And I think that was partially because I never had a father figure growing up. I could be wrong. I should probably go to a shrink. I don't really care. But we do have an issue where a lot of kids that do grow up in broken families like that, they're not capable of doing everything that a person should, per se. You know, yeah. You know, whoever you want to learn it from, somebody is supposed to teach you how to be a man if you're a man. Sure. And, you know, somebody is supposed to teach you how to be a woman if you're a woman.
Yep.
And that's not happening anymore. 100% by design. I don't exactly know how they did it, per se. I should probably look into it. But whenever you break up a home, you create division. And the more division that's created, obviously, it's easier to control a populace, and so that's why they did it. But unfortunately, because of that, it's also led to a lot of people don't want to work. And that's, you know, whoever they are, for whatever reason that they want to have, unfortunately, they never really learned from their parents the things that they were supposed to be productive in society. Which, you know, there's obviously you can be productive in society in a lot of ways, but even if you go to work every day, but you're a raging asshole to everybody you meet, it's like, I don't really consider you that productive.
Or you have a job that if you didn't do it, nothing would really happen.
They're so common, and I hate them. But that's also another thing. That's kind of where a lot of people fall into, though, unfortunately. I think actually the rise of broken homes and broken people has led to the explosion of admin jobs because they have no place else.
I think we also have this thing, like, I think this is probably worse for folks your age that went through university, college, et cetera. This expectation that you're going to have this big, meaningful impact, like the other direction, like this huge, meaningful, impactful, life fulfilling job.
Yep.
It's going to pay really well. And you're going to have it in your first, you know, 6 months on the job or some shit. Like that has never, and I think we've actually created this false mythology. You know, in 1955, a man could work with a family of six and he could take care of everybody, pay all the bills. And like that guy didn't bust his ass and think every day was one day before payday. God, I hope I can make it one more day till I get paid. Like, don't think that those people didn't struggle. I think that we've painted this picture for young people that like the single male household provider thing was easy to do in 1950, 1960. I will not say it wasn't easier than today, but it was never easy.
It was different.
It was different. And so these people expect to have this fulfilling, meaningful, high income. Cause I did everything I was told. I went to school. I got good grades, you know, and there's a Billy Joel song from the '80s that will explain that to you, right? Our graduations hang on the wall, but they never really helped us at all. Right. Mm-hmm. This isn't new. That song was written in 1982. That song's from 1982. Do not think this is new, young folks. But, you know, the other side of it is if you don't see a future, then why would you put the extra effort in? I think that's what it is. We've created a past that cannot possibly be, but it's the expectation. And what it makes me think of is Curtis Stone, who now he's like kind of out in the sticks, but he used to like urban farm. He was kind of urban spin farmer. And he would get all these people who watch his YouTube channel, these young people that go there and they want to work as his intern on his farm. And, you know, he's paying them, but they're getting paid dick because they're interns. They're learning.
Yep.
And they'd be there for a week or two and they'd start out, well, when are we going to worry about social justice?
Yeah.
Well, we're farming. We're growing food.
We're making food.
And if we don't harvest it, clean it, and deliver it in the level of quality the chef we're selling it to expects, we're not going to have any money. I can't pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And he quit taking interns because inevitably every one of them that showed up, they wanted more meaning in their life. And he's like, your work really isn't your meaning. If it can be great, but you should learn how to do this because you can do this anywhere you want, like anywhere you want to live. You can move there and do what I'm teaching you right now. And if you do this for 3 to 6 months, you'll know how to do it. They didn't see any value in it because they didn't feel like they were changing the world. They weren't growing flowers for orphans or some shit, you know, and getting paid $200,000 a year to do it. And I'm not even really talking about like the earnings being not reflective of what's possible, but the total picture being like, I have to have some kind of like earth changing, you know, they're playing music in the background and children in Africa are eating because I exist type of meaning in what they're doing. And all you're trying to do in those first couple of years is figure out, what do you really want to do? What do you really want to be?
I think a big disconnect for people is they don't see the end result. You know, it's like, especially if they're working a production job, you know, they're in the back, they're doing the job, and then, you know, they don't see where it goes from there. You know, it's like, you see, you're working on a farm, you don't see people leading that, you don't know what's going on. I've been lucky. I've gotten to work with customers that bring in their vehicles, and so I see the actual impact. Not all the time, obviously, but sometimes I really do see it. I worked on a woman's car. She was driving and broke down. It happened to be like within a couple miles of the dealership I was at the time. Brought it in. Her engine was completely trashed. It ran out of oil. All the valves were smashed, completely junked. And so I think we actually got the engine for it pretty quickly. I think it got in a couple of days because it was a pretty common issue. But, you know, after I fixed her car, you know, put a new engine in it, got everything working great, gave it back to her, just to see, you know, how appreciative somebody can be. You know, she was just passing through. She didn't want her car to break down. Obviously, it's never a good thing, but, you know, it happened. And a lot of people, whenever they're in a situation like that, that's their time of need. They need something. They need, you know, a little bit of help. And being able to fix the car, give it back to her, you can just see how much it meant. That's a pretty big impact. And obviously it's not world changing by any means, but I think if you can help one person in a day, that really can bring a lot of meaning into your life. And for some people, I think there's a big disconnect there. They never see the end result. And so it's like, obviously if you don't go and give a car to a person after they absolutely schnocked their engine, then you're not going to see how appreciative they can be. But whenever you hand her the keys and she's crying because now she has her car back and she can go pick up her kids, that's different. That means something. And if we had a little bit less of a disconnect, I think that could be a good thing. I think that's kind of the quote unquote administration kind of position separates that. But, you know, if we had more people who could see the actual impact they're making, it doesn't need to be big, but just something, just a little bit, I think that would actually improve a lot of their desire to work. Because I do believe that helping people is extremely fulfilling, and seeing the end result, I think, can be very rewarding for them.
Are there any things, resources or otherwise, that maybe would have been beneficial to you prior to you entering the workplace, and that maybe we could think about that for people that aren't there yet?
So I think the big thing is that, people need to be able to, I think interpersonal skills are a big deal. And being able to be professional with another person. A lot of people that I see, especially younger ones coming in, and older ones too, that just never learned. You can have your interpersonal relations with, like, say you're talking to your friend or you're talking to your family or whatever. That's one thing. But being able to actually talk to somebody in a professional sense, you know, to be able to correctly convey, you know, whatever you need to convey, without making it seem insulting, is a very important skill that I think a lot of people don't have. Obviously, I think everybody needs to know how to handle money correctly, which isn't really done properly. I think the biggest thing is that a lot of people need to learn patience. really, patience is a big thing, because a lot of things you're going to have to wait for, or you're going to have to work, and then you're not going to be able to see the end of your work for a while. And a lot of people, they can't do that anymore. unfortunately, the big things, though, are interpersonal skills, because I've watched somebody go and talk to a customer one time and just basically told him right to his face that he's an idiot. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? You're just, that guy's pissed now. Now I got to go fix it. And unfortunately, I see it a lot in the younger folks, because really all their relationship skills that they learn are either from, you know, hanging out with their friends or with teachers. And teachers really nowadays don't demand an actual professional engagement, which I can understand why. A lot of teachers are stupid. Not saying all of them are.
I got you.
Don't get insulted at me, people. But a lot of teachers, especially nowadays, you know, say they just graduated college and then they go into teaching, you know, they haven't developed their interpersonal skills either. And so it's like, how can you teach interpersonal skills if you don't have any? And so being able to be professional with people and not insult them, you wouldn't think that's a big deal, but it actually is. There's too many times where people just don't know when to shut up. and it's super common. And then, you know, they always have to add something. They always have to get some final word in. They have to do whatever. It's just, you know, say your piece and then shut up and get out of the way. Maybe there's a way that they can teach that. Honestly, I don't know how you can teach it in a professional set, or not professional, but I don't know how you can teach it in a standardized education setting. Because realistically, it's not something that you can just... I suppose you technically can standardize it, but I don't think it would actually correctly convey what you're trying to convey, because obviously your inflection means a lot too. And so if you have somebody that just sounds like they want to, you know, hang themselves while they're talking to you, obviously you don't want to do business with them.
Sure.
But, you know, if you go through a drive-thru, which obviously I don't think you do a whole lot anymore, but if you go through a drive-thru and you listen to the person reading the menu over the loudspeaker or whatever, most of the time they sound like they'd just rather go in the back and have a blunt. And so, you know, obviously that's a small microcosm of what's actually happening, but it bleeds into everything. If you don't have a good attitude whenever you're talking with a customer or talking with even people that you work next to, people just aren't going to want to work with you, and then you're going to get more miserable, and it just snowballs from there, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that's really one of the biggest things, is people need to learn some interpersonal skills before they actually get into the workforce, because learning interpersonal skills in the workforce can be pretty detrimental, especially if you say the wrong thing to the wrong client. You know, say it's a client that you had a huge contract with, and it's like, wow, this guy's a fucking prick. He's like, why would I ever want to work with this company ever again?
Yeah.
You know, you need to be able to approach people and not be off-putting.
Yeah, and if I think you are, I'm not going to hire you, especially if, you know, if I'm hiring you to sit in a room and write code for me, I really don't care.
Yeah, then it doesn't really matter.
If you're going to talk to my customers,
mm-hmm.
I care a lot.
Yeah.
Because 100%. One bad experience with a brand can destroy that brand's reputation with that channel forever. And that channel might be one person a day, but that person that you did it with might go work for a company tomorrow. And if I had that right relationship, I could have doubled my business off one person that doesn't want to do business with me because they think you're an idiot. And if I would hire you, I must be one too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's understood. I think there is a lack of, like, just know how to shake hands, look somebody in the eye, and speak properly.
Yep.
Right. And back to your earlier recommendation to homeschool your kids,
mm-hmm. As
I've interviewed young people, I can spot a homeschool kid about that fast. Very seldom am I wrong. But the ones that can talk to me like they're already an adult when they're 15 are almost inevitably homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100%, but it's a much higher percentage. But straight back, shoulders back, shake hand, good firm grip, not trying to crush you or anything, but like it's not limpy, wimpy shit.
Oh, man.
like looking no in idea. The eye, like, and saying, you know, when you're like interviewing, I'm like, yes, sir, or whatever. I don't even need that, but I appreciate it when I hear it. I know what I'm dealing with. I know that person's going to talk to a customer the right way.
Yep.
You know, and it also kind of look at like a job interview, like a first date. And my advice to young people, if your first date, that person's an asshole to you, immediately get cut bait.
Yeah.
Because that's the best behavior you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you interview with me, I kind of look at it like a first, like a blind date. Like, do I even want to have a discussion about this going forward? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that interpersonal ethic is a huge piece of it. And I think I don't bash tech. If it wasn't for tech, I couldn't do what I do. Yep. But I think that living in the phone thing is a big part of that because, you know, we get calling phones. We shouldn't even call them phones. Nobody frigging calls anybody on them anymore. Everything's text messages, telegram messages, social media. And so it's not necessarily that the thing itself is bad, but since it's replaced even what we're doing using tech right now, communicating and seeing each other,
yep.
But that person's not used to having to concern themselves with looking like you're paying attention.
Yes.
Right? I have that discussion with young people all the time. Like, you pay attention, and they'll say, well, I am. And they might be, because they've actually developed the skill of, like, looking at the fly on the wall, checking their phone, and actually hearing you. But you haven't created that connection with me, so appearances are important. Yes. And I don't think that people understand that anymore.
Yep. Phones and social media have definitely ruined that with – I mean, even whenever I was going through school, everybody was using Snapchats and whatever else. And so, I mean, obviously social media has been, it can be useful, but it can definitely be harmful as well. And unfortunately, a lot of people approach things in a social media kind of way where they just, you know, give you one sentence and, you know, nothing else. And it's just like, okay, cool. I'll just go fuck myself. It's like, come on, man, give me something to work with here. And I think that's actually a big issue. People just really, they don't connect with each other anymore like they used to, because it's so easy to just play with your damn phone. So it's unfortunate, but realistically, obviously, you can use – they can be used in a good way, so it doesn't make sense to just get rid of them entirely.
No.
But, I mean, obviously, I don't think people should be having them whenever they're 12. Or, you know, I've seen a lot of kids nowadays, it's like they're 3 years old and they got a tablet in front of them. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, you just don't want to take care of your kids, so you just give them a tablet. Now they're just going to be addicted to screens for their whole life. Yeah, I think, and obviously, it's easy to bash young people for doing this, but it's not entirely their fault.
No, it's not.
Yeah, no. The people that give the kid the tablet, they're the issue, not the kid with the tablet. And so whenever you give a kid a smartphone and, you know, they're on social media all the time, it's like, well, you can talk as much trash about the social media as you want, but that's your fault. You gave them the phone.
Yeah, and you gave them the phone. I think the difference is, like, my generation, we were in some ways raised by television versus being raised by a tablet. Mm-hmm. But the difference was television sat in the house.
Yep, never moved.
And at some point, your parents threw you out of the house for the day,
mm-hmm.
right? Get out. Go find. What am I going to? I don't know. Either you can do chores or you can leave.
Yep.
And when the porch light comes on, you better be home. And that was like basically go do something. Go find something to do it yourself. So the TV couldn't go with you,
mm-hmm.
right? So now we're afraid if the kid leaves, somebody's going to steal them or something. They're going to get abducted.
Yep.
And with some good reason too that people think that way. But I also think it's just more visible because like. I've had this discussion with my son. He's so paranoid somebody's going to grab his kids. And I'm like, do you think if there was a real risk of that, that I'd be the one telling you not to worry about it? Because I'll hunt them down, skin them, and kill them. Like, I mean, like,
right.
But he'll say, well, it's so much different now. And I'm like, well, dude, I'm your dad. And when I was growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, freaking Ted Bundy was running around Jacksonville, Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Otis Toole was running around Jacksonville, Florida. The guy that killed Adam Walsh's kid and started the whole, whatever he did, the Most Wanted, right? Like that all came from that kid's head being found in a canal. Like this has always been a risk. We're just more aware of it today. So we have this compulsion to bubble wrap our children.
Yes.
But then life is hard. We have lots of shit to get done, and I can hand them this box, and they're happy.
Yep.
Right? So unlike the television that was stationary, and at least when you were not in the living room, right? Because, you know, growing up, like, I think I was like 16 before the concept of a TV in your bedroom was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go buy my own television. So we didn't, like, have a – we had one TV. You had to compete for it. So even though there was this probably too much dependence on TV, it was limited, and now it's limitless.
Yes.
And I get it, because even sometimes, like, when my wife is just tired from dealing with the kids, if you just let them have the damn things, you can have an hour apiece.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to put a hard – like, we have a hard stop.
Yep.
On, like, no matter how much you used or didn't use it, at 3:30 in the afternoon, you don't touch it again. It's gone until we take you home. Like, and I think you have to have that, because if you don't, then you don't get that interaction. You don't get that thing. And the other thing I think it sucks about it, I've had people talk about this before with the bullying problem, is, you know, there's always bullies in school. There's always kids that get picked on. But when I was growing up, the kid that got picked on, when they went home, it was over.
Yep. Now it's
not.
It
was gone. It was done. And now it's like torment lives with the kids that get tormented forever.
Yep. They go and look at their phone, and next thing you know, they have just pages of people bullying them for whatever
shit
reason.
About them, and God help you if you have like one of those embarrassing situations kids never forget, but now there's a video or a picture of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Leave your phones at home, kids.
Yeah.
I mean, really, though, whenever you get to the point, you have a lot of issues with – even now, though, if you, like, say you have a kid and they do go to public school and is, like, say you need to take the phone away for, you know, like, trying to impose limits and stuff. Nowadays, though, you can't even do that sometimes, because if, you know, people hear about it enough or get pissed off enough, next thing you know, you got the cops and CPS called on you over something that's stupid. And so even then, it's difficult for people to impose restrictions, that even if they're good restrictions for their kids. And again, get your kids out of public schooling. They should never be in public – homeschool your kids. That's the best way to look at it. And that's really the – I don't see any way that a parent can have their kids in public school and not be afraid. Because realistically, it's like, say you have your kid – and they do go out and you kick them out of the house, let them ride bikes and everything and go about all day. They come back home with scrapes and bruises and stuff. And then they go to school the next day. Oh, great. Now you're beating your kid. And so then you have CPS knocking at your door. And it's like, great. Okay. So now I can't do that anymore. And so unfortunately, it's like, it's easy to bash the parents too. And not all the time is it their fault. Sometimes it is, you know, they're in the system and the system punishes you for letting your kids roam free, which is unfortunate, and it should never happen that way, but it does.
Yeah.
Again, get your kids into homeschooling. Don't put them in school. And I think that's the easiest way to correct that concern without trying to bring about change throughout an entire, you know, countrywide thing.
Yeah. But you can't change the country, but you can change yourself and your family. That's
exactly. And that's all you should really care about. Everything else can screw off.
So you obviously didn't come from an idyllic background. You made good out of what you had. But was there any point, because you mentioned in your app, you've been listening to the show for like quite a while.
Yep.
But when you mentioned when you were born, I'm like, so he wasn't even two digits in age when I started this show. It's been around a while. It's like 16 years this show's been out now. Whether this show is part of it or not, you know, we have the slogan of live that better life if times get tougher, even if they don't. Was there some point that you like made some course corrections and decided like, if I want my life to have meaning, if I want my life to get me somewhere, I need to change what I'm doing? And what was that like when you did it?
So a couple of years ago, I want to say it was probably about 4 years ago or so. I actually enlisted to join the Marine Corps. It didn't work out. Some things happened in basic. I washed out. It wasn't great. I was really disappointed, in myself especially. And, things were just kind of on a downhill slope from there. Things were just not going well. I think this was, 2019, I believe. And, you know, zombies and survivalist stuff and everything. That's always been cool. It's cool to kids. And I think I was actually looking for, I don't know what I was looking for. Again, this was several years ago. Everything was kind of going downhill. My house was even more broken up than it was before. I had some issues with my girlfriend at the time. And I had been basically forced to move to a new state with my mother, so I had no friends. I was alone, and I spent way too much time on social media. And obviously whenever you're young and on social media, it's pretty easy to get sucked down into the dark things. And I think a lot of people do have that issue where, you know, the algorithm kind of works with it, where if you just have like one bad thing, it kind of cascades. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not actually a big deal, it feels like a big deal to you. So unfortunately, I there was some not great times after I got removed from the Marine Corps, and I felt like I needed to do something more, because realistically I think I was making $18 an hour, which wasn't that bad, and I hated work. I hated everybody at work. Basically, I woke up and I didn't want to do anything because I was miserable. And obviously this is probably something that happens a lot for people. It's just, you wake up in the morning, you're miserable, you don't want to go to work, but if you don't go to work, then you're going to be even more miserable because you don't have any money, and so then eventually you're going to get kicked out, whatever. And so it's a cascading misery, and unfortunately miserable people like to be with miserable people, and so I started hanging out with miserable people, and that obviously that's not good. Compounding misery is atrocious. And it can definitely cause some serious issues. So I think I found your podcast whenever I think I was just trying to pass the time and trying to learn about survivalism, I believe. Obviously, yeah. Survival podcast, it kind of makes sense. And, you know, I listened to a couple of your podcasts and I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. I thought this was about survivalism and stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was thinking about prepper, you got to have, 30 guns and a bunker and 2 years worth of food and whatever. It's like, which some of that you should have. But and then, I listened to you more and more. I was just listening to everything. I lived in Iowa at the time. No. Yes. No. Illinois. I lived in Illinois at the time. Okay. And my girlfriend was in school in the UP of Michigan. And so every time I'd go and visit her, I have 8 hours of driving, and so I'd listen to 8 hours of your podcast. And I was like, wait a minute, nobody ever told me this stuff. You mean I'm actually supposed to, not spend all of my money and actually, work somewhere that I actually don't want to,
Yeah.
Hang myself there. It's like, wait a minute, hold on now. and so it was actually, it's actually, whenever you're young, you kind of flip-flop a lot, and I actually, for a while, I was, more liberal-leaning and then more conservative-leaning, and I flip-flop, because I was young and stupid and didn't know anything. And then, obviously, after listening to you for a while, I kind of understood that, it's not black and white. Everything's different shades of gray. And so then I was listening, and that's whenever I started to develop, maybe I should actually be working hard and, trying to make my life better. Maybe if I actually work hard and do what I need to do, my life will get better. And then I think I listened to one of your podcasts, and this was a couple of years ago, so I'm not going to remember which one. But you were, it was like 3 questions to figure out if you were an anarchist or something.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but I was like, actually, I don't know if you let it off with that, but basically I was like, wait a minute, am I an anarchist? Wait a second now, because I was like, oh, maybe I'm a libertarian. It's like, this stuff doesn't make any sense. But then I was like, wait a minute, violence against people who did nothing wrong to me. I should think about this. And so that's whenever I learned I'm actually an anarchist. It's been a wild ride since then. But I think right after I started listening to your podcast, I actually got the opportunity to go to the dealership, that I worked at, which is, you know, everybody calls them stealerships, you know, understandable. Cause a lot of them are kind of scummy. And I was like, I had been listening to your podcast, so I was a little bit better than I was prior, in the headspace. And so I was like, you know what? I'll start this. Even if it's not great, you know, it's like, it's a pay raise. You know, I can always just move somewhere later. And then I started working there, and it was a pretty significant pay increase. And because of that, I was able to start saving some money, and started to get some stuff paid off. So I think that was almost 3 years ago now. And I was like, maybe I should listen to this guy a little bit more. So, you know, I'm not where I want to be yet, but I don't know if I ever planned on owning a home or, I'll be honest, I didn't know if I would ever make it to 30 whenever I was younger. And I think a lot of younger folks have that issue. It's like, they don't know what's going to happen. And I think because of listening to you, I don't watch your podcast. I listen to it on Spotify. I kind of got to the point where it's like, it doesn't really matter what happens in 10 years per se. I need to worry about me now. And so I've definitely grown a lot, which is good. And I definitely started working better, because now instead of being hopeless, I had at least a glimmer of hope. It's like, I didn't know what's going to happen, but hey, I'm going to do my best with the time that I have now. And, you know, if the world ends in 5 years, the world ends in 5 years, it's nothing I can do about it. So I'm just going to work. And
you know what? The thing is, no matter what happens in 10 years, you'll be better off for it.
Exactly. I've tried explaining
that. You don't control what happens in the next 10 years, but you control what you have to face it with. Because as you're talking, I'm just thinking, I can take two people, give them the exact same job for the exact same money. They can even advance at the same rate. Mm-hmm. And one of them at 35 is going to own a house, have two kids, have a wife, be able to pay all their bills. And the other one's going to be functionally bankrupt.
Yep.
Because of how they handle the money, the cash flow, the situation, what decisions that they make. But part of this is also like losing the model behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like, you know, I don't have great relationships with my family at all, as far as like my dad and all, and my mother and what have you. But the one thing I say about my dad, like my dad had this incredible work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least I got to see that modeled. I didn't get real good modeling for being a father or a husband at all. But I at least got the work ethic modeling, and I'm thinking, well, what if I didn't get that? And what if I didn't have, like, great uncles and stuff like that? When I say great, I mean great as in lineage, not they were great, right? Like, my great uncles and my grandparents, like, they filled the other side of that modeling. And I go, well, what happens to a kid like me coming out of a poor-ass place like the coal region of Pennsylvania if I didn't have that modeled behavior to make me think, okay, I'm not going to get what I want here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it does exist, so I'm going to go find it.
Yes.
Without that modeling, I would have never had that direction. And so there's the whole nature versus nurture argument, right? Like, is it how the child is raised or who the person is innately? And you got the bootstrap people who are like, it's innate, you know? And then you got the coddlers that are like, oh, well, if this person that was a mass murderer had just been raised right, they would be like, you know, delivering kittens in a veterinarian's office or something. And like, I think there's both of those have truth.
Yes,
there are people who are just mentally fucked up or whatever, but no matter how solid that person is or how messed up that person is, how they're raised, how they're taught, how they're modeled to is going to have an impact. And even the person that's going to have a bad outcome, it might have been less bad and hurt less people had they had good guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a big part of what's missing. And for young men, in some ways, it's not worse, but in some ways I think it is. Because most young men who come from broken homes live with their mother.
Yep.
Their mother does the best that they can, but we went and lionized single mothers instead of saying, this sucks, but God bless you for doing it. We've made it like you're like special because you're a single mom. Like you're a hero that doesn't wear a cape. You're up there with school teachers and firefighters.
Yep.
And so we did that at the same time. And then so this young man grows up with us, man in his life. from kindergarten to high school, until they get into high school, 90% of the teachers they have are going to be female. Mm-hmm. When they get into high school, they might have some male teachers, but half of those are going to be soy boys.
Yep.
So what strong parental male influence do some of these people have? And it makes me a little bit sad, but I feel like shows like mine have become that for young men in various different ways, because you've got a gruff older dude that'll tell you the truth whether you like it the fuck or not.
Yep. 100%.
And people don't think young boys want that. That's exactly what they want. Even when they don't know it's what they want, it's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how you learn to be a man. So if no one's modeled what a man is to you, how do you know what you're trying to become? Or another way to look at this, and it's not just about becoming a man, it's like getting to where you want in life, getting the career you want, whatever. Like, if I'm asking for directions from somebody, like, the worst case scenario is somebody doesn't know how to read a map and has never been to the place I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want directions from that person. What would be better is someone that knows how to read a map and knows where the place is. But what would be best is someone who's been from where I am to where I'm trying to go. So if I wanted to have a career, let's say I wanted to be a structural engineer, doesn't even matter what it is, it'd probably be a good idea for me to call up and talk to a bunch of structural engineers. And when I talk to one that says, I grew up poor, my parents were divorced, I floated through high school, I didn't do very good in it, but I got good grades because I didn't want to be bothered. And then I went out and did some other shit, and then I took this path.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably who I should talk to, where someone that grew up in a whole family that knows they're going to be able to go to college should probably talk to the person that got where they're trying to go from that place.
Mm-hmm.
Because the journeys are going to be different because the origin is different than the destination. The destination is the same, but the origins are different.
Yes.
And I don't know why, you know, some redneck duck farmer podcaster support one has to say that. Like, that seems pretty obvious to me, but I've never heard anybody put it that way.
No. I think I've seen a lot of the issue with that. Part of the reason why I like your podcast so much is probably because I have that background where I was raised by my mother and, you know, never had a father figure in my life. It's hard for it, 100%. It's hard for young men to grow up without a father figure. I had a lot of issues in high school, especially as I started to, you know, grow up, and you can say it was, you know, puberty or whatever, but really, I think the issue was I didn't have anybody I could look up to, and that caused loads of issues. That's why I went and enlisted in the Marine Corps, because I was hoping for something. I was hoping for some sort of family father figure. I was trying to look for a direction. Turns out I didn't get that, but I did find your podcast, and it's helped me immensely, and I've tried to share it with some other people that I think it could help. Because really, I want other people to be successful as well. Unfortunately, I do think you have a point where if you don't have that similar starting point, then it doesn't make sense. Because a lot of the people where I, you know, try to show them your podcast and they listen to it and then they give reasons why they don't like it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And okay. Some of them I don't really think it's because they don't like it. I think it's because they can't what's the word? I'm bad with words sometimes. Can't connect. You know, It just stuff doesn't line up. It doesn't make sense for them because this is stuff that they never experienced, really. I tried to show your podcast to one dude, and, you know, he had a pretty good family, and they weren't wealthy by any means, but they were well off. And, you know, so he went through college, basically didn't pay anything at the time. And, you know, I tried to give this to him to try to help him, you know, be better than what he was already at, which was already pretty decent. And he's just like, no. I'm just like, why? I'm just trying to, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said, though, that for a lot of men, they don't have a solid father figure in their life. And I think that's really one of the biggest issues that we have, because especially for men, you know, if you don't have a solid father figure, you don't know how to be a man. And so, you know, you got, your mother can try to teach you however much she wants, but she's not a man. She doesn't know how to be a man. And definitely I made some mistakes whenever I was younger, and I've, you know, been trying to correct everything that I've made mistakes with. But I don't know if I would have ever done it if I hadn't found your podcast. So, I hate you for it.
That makes me, like, whenever I hear that, it makes me happy and sad at the same time. Like, I'm glad that's there and I'm glad that impact happens, but it feels wrong that it takes a voice on them, you know, an iPhone or whatever to say these things that we should all learn growing up, you know. And you know, it is what it is. And I think it is hard on men, but also I think it's very detrimental to young women as well, because like one of the things I've always said is, like, if you have a daughter, you should basically mock date your daughter, because how does a woman, you know, a young woman know how a man should be treating her when she's never seen a model of what that looks like? Like, the shit that girls put up with in young men, I don't, like,
it's bad.
Didn't anybody ever explain to you that you're actually, you guys actually run the world? That's how I feel with women. Don't y'all know you actually run the world?
Right.
There was an old movie. It was terrible. My wife made me watch it back when we were a young couple. It was the Greek wedding one. And like, I'm just kind of zoned out. And there was this one 30-second point where I went, oh, wait, there's something real here. And it was the old lady was telling the daughter, you know, she was, let me tell you something. The man may be the head of the family, but the woman is the neck, and the neck can turn the head any way she wants it to go. And I'm like, women would be so empowered simply by understanding that. Instead, they think empowerment is not needing a man and having a career and then being 41 years old and realizing you're never going to have kids and you really wanted to. That's not empowered. That's having something taken away. That time is one of the few things that does run out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I heard there was some big hubbub about some famous person said something about women, you know, they're after their peak at 50 or something like that, and all these women were outraged. Well, of course you are. By the way, so are we. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, I cannot do the shit physically that I could do when I was 28 years old, now being in my 50s.
Yep.
I am past my prime. That was what he said, past your prime. Well, of course you are. And you are also past childbearing years.
Yep.
Well, you can't reverse that.
Nope.
You know, you can't. And you also probably don't want to be 80 and have an 18-year-old.
Yeah, it's probably not a great idea. Be a little bit not great. But, I mean, people do need to have families. Whether it's you need something. Because really, I know some people that went through like the foster system, you know, where they really don't have a family, and it's a nightmare. It's like, I know I didn't have it great, but they have it bad. So really, I mean, yes, 100%. Everybody needs, well, I think I said this earlier, everybody needs a mother and a father. You know, people need to learn how to work with each other, and that's a big thing. Whether it's, you know, in workplace or in your personal relationships, or even if it's online, wherever it is, you need to be taught how to be a person instead of just somebody, you know, behind a screen. Because right now that's what the majority of people are. They're just somebody behind a screen. Even at work, most of the time they're just somebody behind a screen. You know, they're basically nobody, and they don't exist unless they find a way to exist in a way that other people will acknowledge. So really, regardless of how, you know, even if you do find what you want out of work, I don't think it's going to be worth it unless you have a family to, you know, share it with, because at the end of the day, and I've taken a lot out of this, from what you've said, is you're building a seventh generation, you know, things. It's, you know, you're not building everything for yourself. You're building stuff for your children and your children's children and your children's children's children. And so without that, I think a lot of people lose just about everything. They lose the big picture sight. They want to be the big picture, but really they can become the big pic, you know, they're the big picture to their child, you know, and if they don't have a child, then they're not the big picture. And unfortunately,
are you planting trees? Basically, if you're not planting trees, you're not thinking about tomorrow. And you
exactly. Know. And so that's part of the reasons why everything's so screwed up nowadays too, is because they don't care. You know, they're not going to have to deal with it. You know, they don't, their kids aren't going to have to deal with it because they don't have kids. So why would they care?
So I've got a few more questions for you. We've been 2 hours now, so we do need to wrap up. So concise, right? What's your advice to older generations that are, because we have a blame game going on. Older generations blame kids for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of sanctimonious bullshit on that side. And so what would your advice to be to old bastards like me that are blaming your generation and the younger generation yet for all the problems in the world when I don't think you've had enough time to cause all the problems in the world?
Patience, mostly. Patience and, you know, especially for older folks, you know, I am the direct cause of what y'all have produced. So if you're upset because of the way that I am, then it's probably your fault. And if you want to fix it, then the only thing that you can really do is help fix it. Instead of, you know, throwing blame on somebody, because that's easy, the more important thing is that, you know, if you see somebody being an issue, especially younger folk who most likely never grew up the, you know, with the same structure that you grew up with, and they don't know the things that you know, instead of just trashing them, it's important to teach them and, you know, have some patience, because a lot of times some people don't like to be taught, but have some patience and be like, hey, I understand this isn't great, you know, but this is the way forward. And I think if the older generation, you know, are more experienced, they have longer, they've been here longer than us. If they can do that and they can share their experience, because that's really what is needed. If they can share their experience, then I think everybody is going to tend to get, is going to be more successful together. Okay. So
slip it around.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to the young people that blame the boomers took everything? And I'm thinking, you know, the boomers worked their ass off and killed themselves their whole life. And most of them were part of the 99% that don't make any fucking decisions either. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do this to you as far as the situation that we're all in together.
Yep.
And it seems like there's a lot of young people. And I do think the educational system has reinforced this. It's all their fault they took everything. You'd be just fine if it wasn't for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it that way. So what would your advice be to your generation about the older generation?
So I fall into this sometimes too, which is unfortunate. But it's, I think a lot of people, because, you know, it's like, hey, I was raised a certain way, blah, 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 whatever. Sure, at some point you need to be able to take accountability. The big thing is, if you can take accountability for your own actions, then you're going to realize whether or not your actions are good. And I think accountability is what's lacking a lot. And people like to complain because they don't know solutions. And so I like to, before I complain, I like to know a solution first. And so if people are really going to complain about something, I urge them to try to figure out a solution to it before. And often if you find a solution, you're going to find the actual cause of the problem, and you're going to be a lot less likely to blame somebody who really didn't have anything to do with it. You know, is that's, you know, whether troubleshooting skills are hard to come by nowadays, but you know, you need to be able to look at what you're doing, say, why am I doing this? And then, is this what I should be doing? And it, you know, obviously, if the answer is yes, and keep doing it. But obviously, if the answer is no, then, you know, understand why you did something, what you could do differently, and then definitely solutions before problems is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Because if you just complain about a problem, you're not doing anything other than, oh, you look, here's a problem. That's why I think activists are stupid, is... okay, you can be an activist for whatever. That's not fixing it. You know, go and give me an actual solution, start a solution, and that will correct everything in the long term, instead of just bringing awareness to the problem, bring awareness to the solution.
So I think sides need to talk to each other, and I'd kind of answer both those questions with the same answer. And that is that one of the things we all need to keep in mind is if someone's telling you what you want to hear and you're also not happy with your life, the person you're talking to can't help you.
Probably.
They can't, because you're hearing, you're having your choices in life, and I don't care if you're 70 or 17. You're having your choices in life reinforced as the right choice, and it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that's true, you know what? It won't fix your fucking problem.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hear what you don't want to hear if what you hear is going to help you change where you are and where you're going. Because if you keep doing what you've always done, you will keep getting the results you've always gotten. And no one wants to hear you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the person at 65 bitching about somebody your age, they don't even know you.
Right.
There's some reason they're doing that, and it's because one way or another, they're not happy with where they are in life. Mm-hmm. Or they wouldn't have time to worry about somebody they don't know being the reason for their problem. And the same thing is true of the 20-year-old blaming the 65-year-old. That 65-year-old didn't do shit to you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know them. You don't know anything about their life. You have no idea the shit they went through to get where they are. And exactly. So because people aren't happy, we've been conditioned that everything's binary.
Mm-hmm.
Who's good and who's bad in any conflict? You know, like there's a war, you have to pick a side. How about they both suck and I don't want to pick a side?
Bingo. But
you can't do that, right? Like, so since we have to pick a side, whenever thing isn't working for me, well, it can't be my fault, right? It can't be that I did the wrong thing. I did what I was told to do. Of course it was the right choice. Well, maybe it wasn't.
Yep.
And so when anybody tells you how, like, here's some things you can do to improve your position, they're going to naturally be uncomfortable. When you go to the gym and say, I want to get bigger, if you have a good trainer, he's going to push you to where you don't want to make that last rep, but you have to. Right? So I think a lot of times when people get upset, especially in the other direction, the experience going down to the inexperience, it's because you're being told these are the things that get you where you want to be. And the response I get the most is, well, it's different now. I'm like, I'm not 100.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100.
Still here. Right? Still, you know, what's going on.
It's different now. You have the same DNA I do. You know, not identical, but, you know, we haven't genetically changed in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
As we're not like a new species.
Yep.
Right? Everything that's going on is epigenetic. It's above genetics. That means we can change it.
Yes.
Right? And I think a lot of people don't want to hear that because, number one, I got to do something I don't want to do to make it better. Number two, where I am is at least partially my fault.
Yep.
Fuck, that's uncomfortable. I don't want that. And I would say both sides can learn from that. What do you think? But I think another part is like people don't actually want to be better.
No, it's easy. Like, they like to complain.
Right. So what do you think is preventing from people even just from wanting it? They'll say they want it, but I don't think they do.
Make it so they don't actually get anything good out of complaining. Because that's really what's going on the most, especially with social media. You know, if you complain about something, you know, then you go and look in the comments and everybody's agreeing with you, then it's like, yeah. Oh, great. Now everybody's complaining and people are all saying the same things I'm saying. I must be doing something right. No, if somebody's or you know, even if people disagree with them, well, now they get the enjoyment of watching you upset. And so
yeah.
We really need to stop glorifying the people that are just either one saying outrageous stuff or two just being upset just for the purpose of being upset, which is so easy to fall into. And you know, it's doing the hard stuff is hard for a reason. You know, it's often the right thing. And just stop, you know, antagonizing people that are clearly just dissatisfied with everything. Because they are extremely common and more common every day, unfortunately.
I think what a lot of people my age and a little younger, a little older need to learn is a lot of this crazy shit you see young people doing, it's not real. These are professionals producing videos to trigger you because somebody's going to give them money because they have 1 million followers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there's so much of the like extreme stupidity. It's not real. It's not real. And I think because we're living in this world where people confuse the real and the unreal as both being equal, Like, that's part of why they don't want better, because they can't see what better is. Like, I think that it's one of those things that's true and not true. And you say everybody wants a better life. Like, there's a piece of them that does, but there's what is the piece that's in control? Who's driving the car, right? Like, we're all in the car. We all want to go to a place, but the driver is the one that decides how we get there. Mm-hmm. And in our minds and our spirits and our hearts, we all have certain desires, but who's driving? Like, what piece of your persona have you empowered to pull the levers in your life? Like, you know, I should go do this thing, but I don't feel like it today, so I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the captain? The one that knows it needs to be done, or the one that doesn't feel like it? And I think it's very much the case that, you know, water rolls downhill, stones roll downhill, easiest path is the one that gets taken.
Yep.
And there has to be a point where you decide that I won't take the easiest path. I'll take the one that leads to the best result
mm-hmm.
in the long term. What's hard today becomes easy tomorrow.
Yep. And what's
I deal
easy
with
today
my grandkids all the time. Whenever they do something new and it doesn't immediately work out, they're depressed, they're upset, they're mad, they're crying. Especially my girls are more emotional. So my granddaughter's like 7, and you know, if she tries to do something and it doesn't work, and I always bring it back, she's a very good gymnast, incredible for her age.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, the first time you did a cartwheel, you looked like an idiot and fell on your face. Right? Why do you think learning a new way to do math is going to be any different?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you have to keep reinforcing that with kids. And most of us don't get, never got an explanation like that. Somebody's like, how do you come up with this shit? I don't know. Just look at every, and I think that's one of the things I give advice to people. Like, if your background's stuck up, just do everything the exact opposite. Right?
See,
like, if you like that, yell that, stop yelling. You know, if you never had anybody explain the why and just said, do it because I said so, then explain the why and then say, do it because I said so. Because there is a point, as a parent, you have to say, okay, or a grandparent or a caregiver, like, this is going to happen. I'll explain it to you, but mm-hmm. you're still going to do it. But explain yep. it then. So that they understand why. Because I think there's so many people, like, they do create, like we said, your generation's not rebellious enough, but in some ways it is rebellious, because when you're told the things that will result in what you say you want, you just choose not to believe it, and that's a form of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And again, if somebody's gotten where you want to be, you might want to pay attention to how they got there. I'm just yep. saying. Right. You might want to like go, well, how did this person get to the place that I say I want to be? And I've seen, you know, we're talking about the younger generations, but I still kind of hate doing it, because the kids I'm talking about are probably 40 today now. But I remember good 12, 13 years ago, I was at a conference and there was a guy named Peter something and Grant Schultz. There are two guys, both farmers. They were interns under Mark Shepard, and they were farming in like really different. One was in like Wisconsin and one was in California, but mm-hmm. they had both become very successful, built brands, built farms and everything. And they were doing this presentation on how to get on land and make it profitable.
Yep.
And so I went to see that, cause I wanted to hear what these young guys had to say. And there was a lot of young people, like all the, like it was a multi-track conference where you have like five things going at once. You had to pick. Man, it was all the 18 to 26-year-old people went to that one. And they were all excited until the two of them started talking. And when Grant's like, so we moved on to the place, and I bought a FEMA trailer, and we threw it up on some blocks. And, you know, the first winter, we almost froze to death. And Grant starts, Peter starts talking about how his wife sewed a yurt. And they put the yurt on the property that they were only leasing for the time. And when they got mm-hmm. enough cash flow, they went to the owner and they bought them. You started seeing all of these people looking at, like, looking for the door and like, do I really want to listen to this? And like, but these guys are where you want to be, and they're telling you what it took to get there. And you could see that in the minute that they were talking about 5% being uncomfortable, everybody wanted to bail. And I'm not going to say everybody, but the preponderance of people in that room wanted to bail out.
Yep. 100%.
And I'm thinking, what did you think they were going to give you? Some super secret late night infomercial way to get a $500,000 property for free? You know? And so I think that that's like one of the biggest things, is start paying attention to people that got where you want to be and follow their example.
100%. It's a lot of people, they want to get somewhere, but they don't really want to sacrifice for it. And whether that's because they don't realize that they need to sacrifice or not, a lot of times you're going to need to sacrifice something to get where you want to be. Don't listen to Scotty Kilmer. He's an idiot.
Okay.
That's all I got to say about that.
All right, so that answer was quick coming, because I did want to hit a couple of things I've started here. We got to go fast now because we're at one of the longest episodes we ever did. Green Country says, I have Gen Z sitting here next to me eating up all leftover pizza. He's concerned that hard work spent paying his dues the way old folks did will not pay off on the other side. I think we hit on that, but I think that is part of the problem, isn't it? That if you don't think you're going to get anything out of it, why do it?
Yeah, if you don't think you're going to get anything out of it, you're not going to want to do it, obviously. But really, if an easier way to do it, instead of thinking of doing it the same way, just don't do it the same way that the older generation does it. Because, you know, the older generation, I mean, really, realistically, everybody, they go to work, they make money, buy a house, pay their bills and everything. You know, instead, finding a lifestyle that's maybe not the exact same, but still provides you the same things is the way to go, you know. And you might not realize it, but often that's the same thing that the older generations do. It's like working side hustles, learning how to do a bunch of things, starting your own side business. They were already doing it, you just don't realize it, because now their side business has turned into their full-time business, and, you know, they have, like, two tire shops or whatever, or they have a successful online business. You think it's the same, you know, you don't realize that they also started from nothing.
And
that's the big thing. People don't want to start from nothing. And so,
I think what I would try to get across to anybody is the less you work now, the more you're going to work when you're old.
Yep.
Like that's the reality. People that avoid work, and this is for Green Country's Gen Z sitting next to him there, get your fucking ass to work, young man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you're going to work so much harder at 50 because of your attitude now. You cannot like that. You can think I'm just some old man talking some shit, but that's life experience talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Your life will be harder when you're 50 if you're a lazy ass when you're 20. I promise you that will happen. And the reason that we can tell you that is we all know people. You think it's new that people don't want to work. It's not new.
Mm-hmm.
Freaking John Locke, look that name up if it doesn't ring a bell for you. There's letters of him writing his contemporaries. And this is like when America was being settled and the Industrial Revolution was starting to come, about how hard it was to get the serfs off the farm into the factories. And how that was a problem. So this is not new. And so all of us old people telling you this, it's because we went to school with people just like you that said it's not worth it. And we know where we are now, and we know where they are now, thanks to Facebook.
Yep.
And their life is harder than our life. So mm-hmm. No matter how right you think you are, you will be better off if you work hard when you're young than you don't. And I know it's real easy when you're young to think, but I'll worry about that then. And my response is, oh, yes, you will. Oh, yes, you will. And you would pray to God you could have that time back. It won't come back. It's not coming back. It's gone. You're burning it every day. Jesse says, what if the young person has too many passions, too many potentially productive passions?
Yeah, do all of them. Do them all. See what fails. And then, you know, go with whatever works. Just do everything.
And do one hard. Fuck with them all and pick one and go hard with it, because it really is a passion and it is productive. You'll even if you like other things, well, then you'll like what you're doing. And if it doesn't work out, then you can start working through them.
Actually,
speed date your passions, man. That might be an episode coming up.
Having too many is better than not having any at all. So, I mean, really, you're set off better than the majority of people. So
I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that have no idea what they want in life and they're 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea what so they would trade with you in a heartbeat if you think you have too many. And I wanted to just comment on this one, because I think sometimes it's good to hear that people that you think don't have a problem, you do, did, and got over it. So Dark Horse said that eye contact is unnatural for a neurodivergent like myself. I do my best. Yeah. And I think because of how I present myself and all, people think like I was always the guy that could just talk to anybody. First of all, I'm blind in one eye, so I'm always looking like I'm got something wrong with me. I was kind of a weird kid. And if I had grown up 20 years later, I would have been diagnosed autistic, because they got rid of Asperger's, which is really a more accurate thing. ADHD, they would have pumped medication in my ass and it would have been terrible. Mm-hmm. So how do you get to a point where, like, you can walk into a boardroom and talk to people that make five times your money and tell them what they need to do and look like you're confident? You adapt. So, like, one thing I said to Dark Horse here when he said that in the chat on the side was, look at their eyebrows. So that was a coping mechanism for me. I'm not comfortable to this day looking people in the eye that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like I'm afraid of them. It's very personal. It's very intimate. And I don't want that connection with somebody until I've decided they're a person I want it with. But when you go into a boardroom, when you go in to lead a team or whatever, you got to look at people.
Mm-hmm.
Look at their friggin' eyebrows. They won't know.
Yep.
Like, find your coping mechanism and don't think that the people around you that don't, like, they never experienced what you had, because they may have.
And then, you know, if it's like a you get nervous thing or anything, I just like do like mock stuff of it and just force yourself to do it. Force yourself to do uncomfortable stuff, because otherwise then you'll never do the uncomfortable things. And so that's always going to hold you back.
Yeah. And find a way to do all your shit you love if you want to. Maybe be a podcaster. I don't know, right? Like
do whatever.
Like I had a lot of success in my life, but I did a lot of different things. But I really never truly found what I was passionate about. So I started doing this because then I could wake up every day and talk about whatever I wanted to. Mm-hmm. There's some adaptation that can be made. Dude, this went way longer than I expected, but it was fun. I really thank you for reaching out and having this conversation with us. And I think if you want to sit around bitching about young people, maybe talk to them a little bit more, right? Like we're talking today, because it's really important, I think, that we start having these conversations, because the whole reason we're in this problem is we stop talking to each other. You know, if 60-year-olds and 20-year-olds talk to each other more, they might understand each other more and realize we're just at different points in the journey, but we're on the same one.
100%.
Well, Sam, thanks a lot for being with us today. I appreciate it.
It was great being on. I really enjoyed it. I'm sure I'll find something else to talk to you about sometime soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Yep, you too.
All right, folks, real quick, and I mean really quick, because that did go long today. I wanted to just remind you, if you like the show and the work that we do, consider just starting your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day, I'm bringing it back around again, the Vivor garden bench. This is for your planting and garden maintenance and weeding and stuff. When I got this, I wanted, like, Vivor offered to give me one, and I'm like, yeah, it makes me an old man now. I need a bench to sit on while I'm planting tomatoes or whatever. Okay, so after using it for a month, I would now put this on my list of items that you should have if you're a homesteader and gardener. Not nice to have, you should have. It has made my life better. And maybe I wouldn't be so sore if I'd used something like this over the last 10 years of building things up around here. It's really awesome. It's priced about $35. It's definitely worth checking out, and you can find it and everything else I recommend at tspaz.com. And with that wrapped up, since we went long today, I'll just cut it there and say thank you for tuning in. Tomorrow we'll have an expert counsel Q&A show. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.